With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Good morning, Daniel. Good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing fine and ready and raring to go.
Exactly.
To solve all the problems of the world.
Easy.
And it's easy for us to find them, but not so we can make suggestions, but it's not so easy that we solve many problems. But, of course, my belief is that you have to combat stupid ideas with ideas that are reasonable, and that's what we work on. But the reasonableness that I want to promote today is a change from what we're doing in Venezuela.
Yeah.
You know, Venezuela is an important country. One time it was a great, free market country, very, very wealthy. I think still it has the largest oil reserves of any country in the world. And yet the rescuers came because they didn't like the distribution of wealth. The socialists came, and things have changed. They've gone downhill, and now we have Maduro in there, and things aren't going well, and our leadership doesn't like it. So they just did their old-fashioned way. We'll just get rid of them. So we're in the middle of an ongoing coup. And the question is how this is going to pan out. Is it going to be the best thing for America? Is it going to be good for the Venezuelan people? And it's painted, the administration said, that, we have to restore democracy, to this Venezuela, and they need our help. So we don't like the president. A lot of questions to be raised. But he's not saying, well, it's tough, it's terrible, and we'll cheer you on and may the best group win. But he's assuming that it's our responsibility, so he is way ahead of it. He's picked his guy, who's the president of the assembly, and maybe is a better guy than the other. We don't know. But the process smells a bit. We just stepped up front, picked him, said, you are now the president, and we don't recognize Maduro anymore. There's only one problem with that. It's Maduro still has the army. And this has happened before in Venezuela. Whoever holds the army sometimes prevails a lot longer. And although this is this has been an announcement, and it's similar to what Obama said in 2011 when he said Assad have to go, his whole thing is Maduro has to go, and he's in the process of it. But Assad needing to go didn't go smoothly. I mean, that's 8 years ago, and it looks like Assad's going to be there for a little while, and it invited a lot of trouble, a lot of killing, a lot of money, and I can't believe it could get that bad in Venezuela, but who knows? You know, there might be some pent-up anger down in that area. There's a lot of intrusion and fallacies promoted by socialism, and who knows? These large crowds are turning out in being against Maduro, but then again, how official are they? Our CIA, there is no doubt in our minds that the CIA has been involved for a while. You know, I don't think they would even deny it. So there's a lot of disruption. And now the big thing is even if the coup works and we install our guy, I'm not very optimistic, even though he might be a little bit better or something. Why I don't like that, and I don't think we have the authority to do it. I don't think it works. There's unintended consequences. And over time, the people never adjust well to their leaders being appointed by somebody like the United States. That's why I don't think it's going to work, but it's complex right now. I think it could go either way.
And the irony here is the U.S. using anti-democratic means to restore democracy. The gentleman they picked, who incidentally went to school in the D.C. area, so he may have some connections. The people that Washington picked to run the country, Juan Guaido, he's never been elected president. He's not in a contested race. You know, say there were two people running for president and there was a contest over who actually won. He's never even been in. In fact, his party has boycotted the last several elections. So he's not even running for president. Somehow the U.S. decides to pick him out and say, okay, in the name of democracy, we're going to make you their president. Well, what about the millions of people who voted for Maduro? It doesn't matter if we like him or not. Those people, suddenly, their vote doesn't count. It's not important. And you talk about the military being with Maduro, and that's important, and it helped certainly his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, when he was overthrown by the U.S. about 10 or so years ago, 15 or so years ago. But he also has a lot of people with him, and this is a fact, and this is another parallel with Syria because the U.S. said Assad must go. He's got no support. And they never showed on U.S. television the rallies of hundreds of thousands of people in favor of Assad. Well, we saw the same rallies in Venezuela yesterday, hundreds of thousands of people in favor of Maduro in the country. So when you have that kind of thing for the U.S. to step in and say, okay, your vote doesn't matter. We got this guy. We want him. It does remind me of something that the U.S. has done in history that has never had good results. You think back to 1956 in Hungary, where we urged on the Hungarians, fight the Soviets, fight the Soviets. The implication was that the U.S. would come with you and help you. And, of course, they launched it, and it didn't turn out well. Well, the same is true with the Kurds in Iraq. Remember when they rose up against Saddam? We're with you, guys. We're with you. And then we pulled away, and they were slaughtered. It happens over and over again. So the danger of what the Trump administration did yesterday would be to give the opposition a false sense that the U.S. was militarily behind them and may embolden them to take violent moves that they normally wouldn't have taken and discourage them for seeking peaceful ways of resolving this issue.
And our position, obviously, would be that the people of Venezuela should decide their self-determination. But that's easily met by those who want to promote American greatness around the world. And obviously, one of the reasons why the neocons have jumped on the bandwagon. But if you allowed this to happen, people would say, won't Russia be in there immediately? They already sent two bombers down there. They're going to take over, and they're going to own Venezuela. So therefore, we have to do that to stop Russia. And besides, they had to get Russia in this deal anyway. But that isn't likely to be transition very smoothly because, you know, I think the basic problem is, 10, 15 years ago, you know, they were shifting from some reasonable market, rules to socialism. And socialism always failed. It's the use of force. And so he ruins the country. And then it's real easy to say, we have to save them. We have to give them democracy. And like you say, you don't give democracy by canceling elections. So we say that we have to give them democracy and because socialism doesn't work and it's based on force. But what do we offer? Let's say our position is real clear. Maduro is gone, and a new guy comes in and takes over, and you see some reforms, and it's settled down a little bit. But time will work against us because you're taking a philosophy of socialism, which is ruthless, and becoming more tolerant. People in America are more tolerant of it, which is very dangerous. But I think what we're substituting it with is a variation of authoritarianism. It's called crony capitalism, and it's a fake. We claim it's free markets, but it's the kind of thing that causes a lot of problems in this country. You know, that means central banking and IRS and regulations and the government owning the oil or controlling the oil. It's a different form. But they're both based on authoritarianism out of a central government, and it's hardly anybody in there talking about, you know, maybe these guys that talk about liberty, maybe we ought to consider that. Unfortunately, we're not in the debate, but that's why I'm not optimistic no matter what happens. But I don't think it's going to be smooth, and I don't think in 6 months we're going to say, boy, sure, it was a great move for Trump. Everything is okay now.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk about the socialism of Venezuela, and obviously it's not an economic theory that we endorse, but it's not East Germany either. There's plenty of private property. There's private ownership of businesses. So it's not like we're not talking about, you know, some kind of totalitarian socialist system. They've moved in a way that's an inefficient use of resources. But unfortunately, they've been helped along a lot in their economic downfall by U.S. policy. On the same thing with Cuba, the U.S. sanctioning everything. Not allowing them to trade in the global market, forbidding that, we've only made things worse. And you talk about, true, the neocons will say, if we don't get in there, the Russians will. Ironically, our policy toward Venezuela, with the sanctions, trying to destroy their economy in the hope that they'll rise up against their leader, it just encourages them to turn to Russia. Our policies toward these countries that are on our target list ironically forces this to happen, forces them to turn to Russia, looking around for protection. And that's why, you know, Maduro was in Moscow a couple of weeks ago, trying to do some deals, trying to save his economy. They invited the Russian bombers in there. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy when we claim, oh, the Russians are getting involved, and then we put the boot on the head of these countries and wonder why they turned to Russia.
Well, we made the announcement, our government and Trump and Pompeo, Maduro, go. You're not the president anymore, and we've made Guaido, you know, the president. And they're expecting him to accept it, or that's what they're hoping for. But his response was, the American people, diplomats, we're going to close your embassy. You should leave. And our government said, we're not going to leave because you're not the government anymore. We declared you non-government, so we're not going to listen to you. But that incident right there could be the thing that would grow in importance, because he does have the military. And if he starts messing around with the embassy, you know, that may elicit, you know, more violence. But that's at least symbolically a big deal. And you see, the lines are being drawn right here on we're not going to leave, and can Maduro make us leave? And how did we get ourselves into this?
Yeah, and they were given 72 hours to leave. They said, we're breaking off relations with the U.S. because you've undermined our country. This is where I really smell the hands of the neocons, or the fingers of the neocons, because the U.S. pushed back and said, well, as you say, well, you're not the government, so you can't tell us to leave. Our people are staying there, and you better not touch them or you're going to be sorry. All options on the table. What that does is it puts these diplomats essentially as a tripwire. You know, it puts them out there as a tripwire, literally puts them in danger to try to provoke a response from the Venezuelan government, from the Venezuelan military against them, to justify what the neocons want, which is a military invasion of Venezuela. So I would say it's very disingenuous. I would say to the extreme to misuse diplomats in this kind of manner.
And false flags can always occur, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, nobody knows exactly who did what, but the violence escalates. But I don't think they're going to have an election soon that will sort this all out. And I think we should stay out of it. I don't think that means that Russia will immediately open up a huge Air Force base there, because that would mean that it would just be escalation. But, you know, this to me shouldn't totally surprise us. Yes, we can defend a little bit of what's going on in Venezuela, but we've been down there for 100 years. We have interfered with the governments down there. All we have to do is get people to read Smedley Butler, you know, about his book on war. War is a racket, and the military set up. And there's some racketeering going on here.
Oh, yeah.
Weaponry and oil and these different things, and then the need to have power over a whole region. So they don't want Venezuela to be successful in beating the United States. That's why I think violence is yet to come.
Yeah, and Dr. Paul, I got a little slideshow for our viewers to understand what's really going on here. If we can go to number two first, let's skip number one for now and hit number two. These are the people that just a week ago were telling Trump he's a monster, he's got to be impeached, how dare he pull our troops out of Syria, he's horrible, he's terrible. Here's little Marco Rubio, and now he's really puffed up, he's got a lot of pride now. He says, U.S. diplomats in Venezuela should present their credentials to President Guaido. Maduro has no authority. And trust me on this one, if Maduro is stupid enough to test Trump by harming any U.S. diplomat, he'll have to pay the price. And here's the second one. And here's Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush, whose brother launched the Iraq War, the Iraq regime change. This is the right call. Thank you, Mr. President. So here's the praise. And it is bipartisan, Dr. Paul. Here is Steny Hoyer, the Democrat leader of the House of Representatives, issuing a statement saying, I urge Venezuela's military and security forces to play a positive role. Endorsing the U.S. Recognizing the unelected leader as president. So in Washington, regime change is a bipartisan policy.
Boy, with all this, it sounds optimistic that they're coming together. They're bipartisan, and we're going to have our problem solved, and tomorrow the government's going to be open, and Nancy Pelosi and Trump are going to sit down and have a cup of tea, you know. So it is a real tragedy. But it is a reflection of a philosophy in foreign policy that we strongly reject. That is that we don't want an empire. We don't have the authority to have an empire. They're never very successful long term, and the long term is getting close. It has economic consequences, and the economic consequences is usually contributes to debt, and usually the policies tend to fail. Now, this one, I don't know how far this is going to go, but it eventually will fail. Because we made these same arguments, Daniel, back, you know, at the beginning of this century in the Middle East, saying, why do it? It's not going to work. And, it's a lot of peace and prosperity in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and Libya. Everything is just wonderful. They just go mess up one place and they go on to the next one. So if chaos is beneficial to them, they're being very successful.
And if regime change, as you point out, had worked even in one spot, I would shut up, you know. But I think we've been right. So I guess to close out at a very high risk of quoting this person, but this person has a sense of humor. But we like to point out hypocrisy on the show, Dr. Paul, and this is great. Pointing out hypocrisy, this is the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Here's what he said earlier today. The U.S., which is paranoid about somebody interfering in their elections, even though they have no proof of that, themselves are trying to rule the fates of other peoples. What they actually do is interfere in their internal affairs. There's no need for Mueller to determine that.
Well, he's on target there, because if you look back and look at history of what we have done, especially since the CIA has become more aggressive, there is no doubt that we as a country and with the use of the CIA have been involved in more elections, interfering in elections, and have been involved in more coups probably than any other country in the history of the world. And yet we all do it in the name of goodness and greatness and spreading American values. So there is a tremendous amount of hypocrisy in that. So I think that the only answer that we can give is arguing the case for the moral case for non-intervention, the constitutional case for non-intervention, and the practical case for non-intervention, because it all favors minding our own business, protecting our people, taking care of people here at home, striving to set an example of how a free market economy with a sound monetary system serves the people and sets a standard where others will say, you know, this American experiment working pretty good. Maybe we ought to go to America. We want to call up all those free market economists, those Austrian economists, and study and find out how do they get so successful, because just look at the thriving. But right now, I'm sorry to say that if they would come now, they would find that we're at loggerheads over how to run the economy, and people who claim they believe in radical socialism are the ones who are getting the most noise. And we have the universities behind them, and we have the mainstream media behind them. So it's a struggle. But in spite of it all, the message of liberty is alive and well, and it's growing constantly, and we have to and we have to pursue it. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.